Bulletin, you got one of these pinky salmon colored little sheets. I don't really plan to speak a lot on the gospel, but I wanted to share this insight from Timothy Luke Johnson. Luke Timothy Johnson in his commentary. So let me just read this first bit. He's talking about the two parables. The next parable in after this one is about the Pharisee and the publican, about a self-righteous man and his prayer, and a sinner who's humble before God. And so his summary includes that in the last sentence. These parables go together to and do more than remind us that prayer is a theme in Luke Acts. They show us why prayer is a theme. For Luke, the writer of the gospel, prayer is faith in action. Prayer is not an optional exercise in piety carried out to demonstrate one's relationship with God. Prayer is that relationship with God. The way one prays, therefore, reveals that relationship. If the disciples do not cry out day and night to the Lord, then they, in fact, do not have faith, for that is what faith does. Prayer is that relationship with God. The way one prays, therefore, reveals that relationship. To have faith in God means to entrust ourselves to Him and to be keeping touch, for one thing, but also to be casting our cares and our burdens upon Him. And this is why I wanted to spend some time with Jacob's story in Genesis. Because it's the church has identified this as a model of prayer. Now, this is a certain type of prayer. I think the key thing for the lectionary, the people who put the lectionary together, is the idea of persistence, continuing, because Jacob is persistent in his wrestling. All night he wrestles till dawn. But just briefly, I have to set this up with the story of Jacob. If you're not familiar or unsure of details, I would encourage you just to go back to Genesis at some point and read the story. It's fairly short. It's a great story. Lots of action, a lot of stuff going on. But Jacob is the second born in his family, though he's a twin. So he's second born by just seconds. Now, that was a big deal back in the day. The firstborn received an extra share of the inheritance and carried on the family tradition or name or whatever. And so when there was twins, you still had to identify the firstborn. And that was not Jacob in this case. But Jacob comes out holding on to the heel of his brothers, of his brother. And that's the name Jacob, the one who grasps the heel. And this becomes associated as a supplanter, someone who's a trickster, someone who deceives, someone who sneaks up on you and grabs you when you're not looking. And so it might not necessarily be a bad thing, but Jacob lives into this other side of his name. He is a deceiver. He is a manipulator. And he is always looking out for himself. That's Jacob as the scriptures present him to us. Now he meets his match a bit. So he steals his older brother's blessing after he's already bought his older brother's birthright by holding out a bowl of stew when his brother was famished. At any rate, that's part of the story. But he steals his brother's blessing by deceiving his father. His brother says, "You wait. Wait till dad dies and you're a dead man, Jacob." Now, Jacob's a bit of a wuss. His brother's a man's man. So Jacob's a little worried, and so is his mother. So they decide that he goes off to his uncle, Laban. Laban turns out to be a manipulator and a deceiver himself, and Jacob has his hands full keeping pace with Laban for 20 years. God tells Jacob to return back to his homeland. This is the land that God has promised Abraham and Abraham's son Isaac to give them. And Jacob has received this promise from God to be the inheritor of the promise of God to Abraham and renewed to Isaac and now to Jacob to give the land to. And God says, it's time for you to go back. This means Jacob needs to go back to Esau. On his way back, Jacob gets up in the middle of the night. He's like, Laban, the guy's a little crazy. He's my father-in-law. He's a little crazy. I'm just going to leave town. And so he just bolts, right? Takes his wife, all his goods, all his herds, all his servants, his wife and his kids, and leaves without saying goodbye. Laban rightfully, probably, I think we'd all expect this, gets together a group of men, armed men, and goes after Jacob. Jacob's traveling with women and herds. So Laban easily catches up to Jacob. On the way there, God appears to Laban and says, you don't touch Jacob. You understand me? Laban's like, yeah, you're God. Okay, yeah, I gotcha. And he relays this to Jacob. So Jacob has this affirmation. He has God telling him to return to land because God wants to bless him. He has Laban testifying. You're in my power. I could do harm to you, but God has warned me not to touch you. Genesis 32 begins with this statement that Jacob meets the angels of God. This is not the first time he's met the angels of God. And he says, God's camp is here. And he calls the place Mahanaim, or whatever it is. That's Genesis 32, verse 1. This is all to set the context for what happens next. Jacob says, I'm going to alert Esau to my coming. I'm going to let him know that I'm a wealthy man. I've been gone 20 years. God has blessed me. Come with family and all these herds. He sends out a messenger. They return and say, your brother Esau is coming to meet you with 400 men. And Jacob goes into panic mode, and Jacob immediately goes into let me fix this mode, because that's Jacob's MO. Jacob fixes things, he does things, he turns things to his advantage. That's what Jacob's about. It's about Jacob, and Jacob knows how to make it work for Jacob. And so he immediately splits his camp into two separate camps. He says, Esau might come and attack the first one, and the second one will be saved. And then he prays. He reminds God, God, I'm here because you told me to return to land. You told me you were going to bless me. And I have to admit, God, it's a great prayer. You should read it. It's in chapter 32. I have to admit, God, that I left the Jordan. I crossed this here Jordan with my staff, myself alone and just my staff. That's all I had. And now I'm coming back, this multitude. You have blessed me, and I thank you for that. But listen, God, my brother's coming. He could very well kill me and wipe out my entire family. What then of your promises? You promised, God. That's Jacob's prayer, essentially. And then he goes back into strategizing mode. I know what I'll do. And he splits up of his herds with different droves, goats, camels, cows, donkeys, 580, something like that, animals he's going to give Esau, and he sends them out in droves. He's like, you go first, leave a space. When you get to Esau, you say, he's going to say, what's all this? And he'll say, these are Jacob's animals. He's right behind us, and he's given them to you, so you might find favor in your sight. Five times that happens, all these droves. Jacob still can't sleep, and he gets his wife and kids and everybody across the river, across the ford. Now remember this, Jordan is a symbol for God's people. You cross the Jordan to enter the promised land. Now this is called the Jabbok, but the Jabbok is a tributary to Jordan, and it could be that he's right in the corner there. Anyway, he said, I crossed this here Jordan, leaving 20 years ago, just me and my staff. So he's acknowledging there's this symbol, I think, needs to be part of this story, right? So this is the setup. Jacob is here at the Jordan, going to cross over. He's now alone. Everything he owns, all his family, everything's on the other side of the Jordan. He's alone, and he cannot cross because all of the sudden, there's a man standing there who begins to wrestle with him. Like, this is just crazy stuff, right? This is just crazy. Well, where'd this guy come from? Anyway, one commentary says, immediately, perhaps Jacob initially thought it was Esau, right? Imagine that. Anyhow, because his guilty conscience is working overtime. He was wrong. He wronged Esau. Anyway, so he begins to wrestle with this man. They wrestle all night long. The man does not prevail against Jacob. When he sees he's not prevailing against Jacob, he says, you need to let me go. It's daylight. Now, there seems to be some kind of old legends and myths, or at least this is the sensibility of the day and age, and perhaps in Jacob's mind. If he can grab the spiritual messenger and hold them till daylight, remember, like Rumpelstiltskin or whatever, or whoever. There seems to be some of this going on, but regardless, that's the story. Let me go. Daylight is coming. But prior to this, when he saw he didn't prevail, he touched Jacob's hip and he dislocates it. So first of all, we need to realize this man could have left any time. Jacob is not holding him here. The man is choosing to remain here. Anybody that can just sort of reach over and dislocate your hip has an advantage in a wrestling match, I would think. Yeah? And Jacob, now with a bum hip, is in no position to continue to grab this man and hold him down or hold him in place. And Jacob says, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. And perhaps, I think there's still some of this manipulation stuff going on. Jacob's like, I know how this works. I've got you. If you want to leave, you need to bless me. The man does bless Jacob, but I don't think it's because Jacob manipulated a blessing out of him. Anyway, this is one way of telling the story. There's other ways. The man says, let me go. Jacob says, not until you bless me. And the man says, what is your name? And I think this is the key. This is the turning point of the story. Remember what the name Jacob means. And Jacob says, I'm a cheat. I'm a manipulator. I'm dishonest. I'm all about myself. I'm Jacob. And this opens up the door for the blessing. And the man says, that's not a good name for you. I know you used to celebrate it. I know you used to make it work for you. But I know now that you want something different because you have prevailed. You've wrestled all night long. Jacob probably could have gone, get away from me. What the heck? My family's over there. They're waiting for me. But he knew something was going on, and he said yes to it, and he prevailed. And the man says, your name will now be Israel, the one who strives with God. And he blessed him, and he departed. And the last scene is this. Well, Jacob, first of all, says, this, I've just seen the face of God, and I survived. And he calls the name Peniel. But the last scene by the narrator is this. And as the sun rose, Jacob limped across the Peniel, across the face of God. He is a changed man. The rest of the story of Jacob, and it pretty much wraps up after this great reunion with Esau. You need to read it, chapter 33. Jacob is a new man. There's no more any of this manipulation, this self-reliance, this strategizing. The story more or less passes on to his children and Joseph in particular. But I want you to think about prayer. Because the church has said, oh, Jesus is encouraging prayer here. That reminds me of Jacob. The church has said we need to learn something here. There's a connection here. Now, let's be straight about this. First of all, Jacob is in crisis. Second of all, God shows up. Jacob does not make the man appear. Jacob just responds to the occasion, to the invitation, you might say. But in his crisis, in his need, in his desperation, He goes all out to secure a new future. And I think the moment that he realizes who he is and he confesses it, what is your name? I am Cheat. That opens him up to receive the benefits of the prayer. But he couldn't begin there. Let's suppose, you know, Jacob over the coffee, you know, he's just had some falafas and pitas and he's like, oh yeah, I feel good. A little glass of wine. He's like, yeah, I guess. As far as Esau goes, I guess I did sort of, yeah, I was probably a bit of a cheat there. That's not the same thing, is it? We probably all know what those sorts of confessions look like. Yeah, well, maybe, okay, oh, I probably did. Yeah, go over the line there. Probably. This is not that. This is Isaiah 6, chapter 6. Jacob is saying, woe is me, I am undone, for I'm a man of unclean lips. And I dwell with the people of unclean lips. Jacob says, I am cheat. And all the bluster, all the bravado, all the manipulating, all the debating, all the negotiation goes out the window. And God says, would you prefer to be Jacob? Or do you want to move forward? And this is what God says to you and I. But let's be clear. This is crisis, desperation. This is confession of sins. It's real. That's gut level. That goes all the way through us. And this is precipitated by God. If there's anything that we can take from this on our end, is to say, how will I respond when the invitation is there? You may be walking down a dark street one night and all of a sudden a man. No, probably not. It's probably not going to be a man. You will still have opportunity to wrestle with God. Yes? I think you know this. I think you know those times when you have wrestled. Can we learn from Jacob and be encouraged by Jesus' counsel to persevere, to not be discouraged? Unlike Jacob, this probably will not be finished in one night. Although perhaps, I've never prayed all night. I've never wrestled with God all night. I've wrestled with God. But I get tired and I'm like, catch you next time, big guy. You know, I mean, I don't know what I do. I get tired. So it's probably not going to be finished in one night. This might take weeks, days, hours, months, years. This is why Jesus says, God's going to answer. He'll do it quickly, but it's in his time. When I return, will I find faith? If this thing were going to happen and be resolved it overnight, that wouldn't be a question. Jesus is asking, will you persevere? Will you continue to say, I no longer want to be this man or this woman, the one who cheats, the one who spreads sorrow and discord, human breakage and wreckage, the one who looks out for themselves? I don't want to be that. Don't you have a new future for me, Lord? That's why I'm here. I will not let you go until you bless me. And Jesus says, can you continue to pray that until it becomes real? Now, again, you can't make this happen. If Jacob could have made this happen, it would have been Jacob, same old, same old. You can respond when the invitation is there. This movement from who I was to whom I am becoming, this receiving the new name, it's not easy. This isn't armchair stuff. This isn't for your couch potato Christians. Jacob limped over the stream, crippled in his hip. but a new man with a new name, the one who strives with God and prevails. What's our destiny? Jesus has given you that choice. Is there really so much back here that you need to save it? You're really so, there's been so much benefit in being that person that you want to continue that. That's the trajectory you want to stick on. Or are you willing to say, God, I'm not letting you go until you bless me. I will not let you go until you bless me.